It's time for the George Williams Show on FM Talk 106.5. George Williams, retired U.S. Marine Major, Vietnam veteran, retired federal agent, former vice chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, and world traveler, brings his wealth of information, sharing his thoughts on today's politics, and taking your calls and texts at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
So glad to be behind the mic tonight for the last time this year, folks. Didn't this year move fast? I mean, to me, the last 20 years moved fast. I can remember moving back here from South Florida, which was my last duty station as a DEA special agent, and moving back to Alabama. I left here in 1956, folks, and we migrated to Paterson, New Jersey, my mother, father, and their 8 children. So I'm glad to be back in Alabama. Glad to be back. Nobody bothers me. I'm just going to live the rest of my life in L.A., Lower Alabama, folks. Our number here is 251-343-0106. And if you know anyone outside our Mobile, Baldwin County listening area, please tell them they can get us at fmtalk1065.com. That's fmtalk1065.com. I have folks listening from all over, from Africa, from South America, and I was stationed as a DEA agent in those 2 countries for numerous years, okay? And they're listening, and folks in New Jersey, New York, all over the place, South Florida, they're listening to my show, and I'm really happy about that. All right, folks, we have a lot to talk about, and we're going to get started. And listen to Dick Morris. You know, I play Dick Morris just about every show, and listen to what he says, and then I'll go over some of the high points that he's talking about. And this is very important. And think about the Democrats, what they're trying to do to this country, what they've done and what they're trying to do, and we're going to put a stop to that on January 20th, when President Trump officially take office. Here we go with Dick Morris.
When the U.S. Constitution was written, the southern states that had less population than the northern ones were worried that the Congress would outlaw slavery. And based on that concern, they insisted that slaves, although they were not allowed to vote, be included in the census that determined the representation of each state in Congress. And according to the compromise that was reached and embedded in the Constitution, free citizens were counted as 1 each, and slaves were counted as 5/8 of a person. Now, after slavery was abolished, the count went back to 1 for 1. But in recent years, as the amount of illegal immigration into the U.S. has increased dramatically, it has resulted in an imbalance in the number of congressional seats allocated to states with large amounts of illegal immigrants. Texas, California, and Florida, for example, have more representation in the House and therefore more electoral votes than they would be entitled to were illegal immigrants not counted. The Pew Research Organization finds that if the count were limited to U.S. citizens and residents and excluded illegal immigrants, Florida, Texas, and California would each lose between 1 and 2 seats. Awarding congressional seats and therefore electoral votes to states for non-citizens, for just inhabitants, whether legal or illegal, is really a tremendous form of bias in the way our Constitution is applied and constitutes a powerful incentive for increasing illegal immigration. The more you have, the more representation you get in Congress. Even though they can't vote, they're in effect silently voting by having their number included in the census.
You know, folks, that was Dick Morris, and I've often thought about this, and he brought up a good point. Why are the Democrats, why do they want to allow so many illegals into this country? Why? I thought about that. I thought about it. And then I heard this tape of Dick Morris, and it all makes sense now, folks. Why did the Bidens open the border? Why did Obama, he started it, okay, allow so many illegals to come into the country? Because he prevented the federal immigration officials from stopping them and sending them back. Okay, why? Well, like Dick Morris said, according to the Constitution, when they do the censors every 10 years, okay, they are supposed to just count U.S. citizens and legal residents. But they're not doing that. They are counting everybody, illegals, etc., etc. Now, why is this important, folks? Think about it now. Because the congressional seats in each state are based on the population of that state. So if, say, a state like New Jersey, it has 9.7 million residents, okay? Now, how many of those residents are citizens or legal, or they're legal residents? You know, a good estimate is that only about 70% of them or eligible to be counted in the census. But they're counting everybody. So because of that, if New Jersey have so many millions of people, residents and citizens, well, that will count to get additional congressional seats, okay? The more people you have in that state, the more congressional seats you're going to have. And what happened in these large states like California, which is a Democratic state, they have so many seats, so many congressional seats. New York, the same way, a Democratic, okay? So they could run... Rule the Congress. Now, in the Senate, it doesn't matter because you have two senators per state. That's it. Okay? Now, think about this, how many of these illegals in these states are voting? And don't tell me none or a small percentage. No. Quite a few of them. Otherwise, why would the Democrats want so many illegals coming into this country? Why would they? There's a reason behind the Democrats opening up our borders. There's a reason why they insist that we count everybody in that city or in that state. And it shouldn't be that way, folks. It should only be U.S. citizens and legal residents, okay? Those that possess an I-151 card. That's the immigration card. Otherwise, they shouldn't be counted. You know why? Because it's going to hurt, in this case, the Republican Party. It's going to hurt them because that state, That state would get more allocated, more congressional seats when they shouldn't be. All right, and then you look at the way they allocate those seats. To me, it's not fair. It's not fair to the citizens of America that they're doing it this way. So that has got to change. that's got to change. And hopefully President Trump would do something about that. Okay? We're hoping. But it's very important. Very important. And you think about it. And that's why we insist that illegals do not vote, or non-citizen. Even if you're legal in the United States, you still can't vote. You're not a citizen. You're not a citizen. So the Democrats keep pushing this. That's why they do not want ID for voting. Okay? We're going to have to stop that, folks. We have to do it, and we have to do it quickly. We'll be back after these messages.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Welcome back, folks. We are here on a mission. Our number here is 251-343-0106. And we have somebody on the line, and his name is Ken Davis. Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing great, George. It's so great to be with you, and especially on a night like tonight when we're looking forward to a new year.
That is correct. Ken, tell our audience something about yourself so that they'll know who you are. I know who you are, and everybody in our audience don't. So give us a little idea.
Yeah, George, I feel like you and I are kindred spirits. I spent a lot of time in the military. I spent 31 years in uniform in both the Army and the Navy, and retired in 2016 as a Rear Admiral. I was Vice Chief of Information for the U.S. Navy, so you and I both served in the sea services,
right. But
also had a civilian career as well. Part of my time in the military, I was a reservist, and I worked in federal law enforcement as well. In fact, I was on staff at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center down in on the coast of Georgia. So you and I have crossed probably some of the same territories over the years.
Right.
And
right.
I most recently was commissioner of the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs for over 5 years. So still very well connected with the military and veterans community. And I love our brothers and sisters who served in uniform. And I've been listening to your show, and like you, I'm concerned about what's been happening in the nation the last few years, and I'm looking forward to hopefully some positive changes coming up.
Great. Ken, you were the VA, Alabama State VA commissioner, correct?
I was, yeah. I started in early 2019 and served in that role until just a couple of months ago.
Yeah, and what happened? There's a lot of advertisement. There's a lot of conversation about what happened to you.
Yeah, really unfortunate situation. And I will tell you, this started with the topic of veterans' mental health.
Okay.
In Alabama, it's a sad state. We have a real problem with veterans' mental health. We have usually the worst or second worst rate of veteran suicides in the country amongst the states. We have very high rates of opioid and other drug addictions. And several years ago, we started, my department and I especially, started raising this issue very heavily and did not, frankly, get a lot of support on it from state officials. We thought a year ago that there were some hopeful signs. The Attorney General, Steve Marshall, did a great job in negotiating settlements with opioid manufacturers and distributors, and Alabama is slated to get over $800 million in opioid settlement money. Well, because of the disproportionate effect on the veteran community, we asked for a significant earmark of those funds for veterans to help that community, and so far have not gotten any of those funds to support veterans. There was a second effort in the legislature to create a state-based veterans mental health care system. It was a bill called the Veterans Access to Care Bill. It got rewritten completely to eliminate that independent mental health system for veterans, scaled it back completely with frankly, some disappointing results. The third effort we thought was post-COVID, there was a lot of federal dollars, whether that's good or bad, flowing to Alabama. One of the grant funds that was available was the American Rescue Plan Act. Mm-hmm. And originally, about $7 million of those grant dollars were supposed to go to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to support nonprofits around the state that provide mental health and other well-being services to veterans to try to overcome some of those appalling statistics that affect our beloved veterans in the state. Mm-hmm. And frankly, those dollars were taken away from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I had to take $7 million out of our operational budget funds to fund those grant dollars to get money to 33 grant recipients around the state, nonprofits and institutions of higher education to help our veterans.
Right.
What ultimately happened, the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, my old job, works for a body called the State Board of Veterans Affairs.
Okay.
It's a 17-member board made up largely by law of representatives of the large veteran service organizations in the state of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Several of those members came to me and expressed serious ethics concerns, as they characterized it, over some of the things that had happened over the previous few months. Now, the state ethics code says in black and white letter law, if an agency head is made aware of ethics concerns, they have a 100% obligation to report that to the Ethics Commission. I explained that to those board members. They understood that. So I reported it to the Ethics Commission. And based on that ethics filing, I was asked by the governor to resign my commission as Commissioner of Veterans Affairs.
Wow.
And eventually it went, I agreed to that. My thought was, you know, you understand this. Anybody who served in the military, we base our service on honor, courage, commitment, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, well, okay, if the governor's asking, I'll agree to resign. And I agreed to resign against my better wishes at the end of December. Lo and behold, over the next few weeks, the State Board of Veterans Affairs convened and unanimously took a vote to ask me to stay as commissioner, and that infuriated the governor, and she unilaterally exercised what she characterized as supreme executive power and removed me from my job immediately.
Wow. Now, getting back, we're going to cover that in a little while, but getting back to the allocations of funds, who is responsible? I know it comes through ADECA, correct?
Well,
they distribute the funds, but who makes the choice of where the funds will go?
Yeah, let me backtrack a little bit. So ADECA is a separate agency. They do a lot of good stuff for communities using grant dollars, both state and federal.
Mm-hmm.
They were not involved, actually, in this whole issue. This was an issue where the dollars were allocated to the state of Alabama and a combination of the state legislature and the state finance department made decisions on the distribution of the federal grant dollars. Now, the separate pot of money, the opioid settlement funds, there was a committee put together by the state legislature to decide the division and distribution of those funds. So two separate pots of money, two legal bases for those sources of funds. ADECA was not involved in those. I've worked with ADECA before. I think well of ADECA, probably some need for a reform there with ADECA, as others have argued, but generally good relationship with them.
Okay.
But they were not involved in this.
Okay, because I was under the understanding that all federal funds that come into Alabama, ADECA is responsible for the distribution, not the selection of where those funds go. They are ordered.
Yeah, that's a good characterization.
Right.
And a lot of those federal grant dollars that flowed after the COVID crisis, ADECA did have a hand in, because that's their job, is community-based development.
Right.
And a lot of those funds that came from the federal government have been earmarked for local communities.
Right.
The Mobile area has been a recipient of some of those funds,
right,
including the ARPA funds.
Now, Ken, where are those $800 million going? Where are those funds going? Where are they going to? To whom?
It's going to be distributed over several years.
Okay.
Last I checked, about $40 million of those funds had been distributed. The majority of those $40 million were distributed to the Alabama Department of Mental Health.
Okay.
There were a few other departments that got smaller amounts, but there's still a lot of money to be distributed, and those decisions will be made by that distribution committee that was put together by the state legislature. I was a member of that committee, and I made strong arguments that, as well as the State Board of Veterans Affairs, unanimously passed a resolution asking that a significant portion of those funds be set aside specifically to address mental health issues, especially opioid addictions in the veteran community, given the disproportionate effect on that community. But so far, none of those funds have been distributed to the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs.
Now, okay. Now, did you go to the, did you go before those legislative committees to argue for those funds? I mean, you know, those are our senators and our House members, and did they refuse you?
That's correct. Yeah, I actually did a pretty extensive presentation presenting studies from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, from the Defense Health Agency, from the Annals of Medicine, and several other private sector research reports that talked about the issue of opioid addictions in veterans. I presented the State Board of Veterans Affairs unanimous resolution asking for a set-aside of the funds. There were several private sector organizations that gave presentations on behalf of veterans in those committee meetings as well.
Right.
The Military Officers Association of America gave a presentation, for instance, but there were several other veterans-related organizations that gave presentations, but none of those funds so far were set aside for the Department of Veterans Affairs to directly address that issue.
Right.
And why that's important, mental health and addictions are largely the responsibility of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Right.
The problem we have in Alabama, my brothers and sisters in the federal VA, they can't hire enough mental health professionals in the state of Alabama. We have a critical problem in Alabama.
All right, Ken, let me stop you. We're going into our break, and then I'm asking you to hold on until after our breaks, and then we'll continue, okay?
Absolutely, George. Thanks.
All right, folks, we're going into a break now, and we're with Ken Davis, the former Commissioner for Veterans Affairs for Alabama. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
All right, welcome back, folks. Our number here is 251-343-0106, and we're talking to Ken Davis, who is the former commissioner for Alabama Veterans Affairs. Ken, welcome. Welcome again.
Well, thanks so much, George.
All right. Ken, it appears, you know, we've got the situation with you and the governor and the board. And also, you appeared before our state legislatures, and they have control over those funds, and they would not allocate any to the veterans. These are folks who we elected to represent us.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed. Now, to be fair, that committee that they put together for distribution of the funds was made up of both legislators and others that were appointed to that committee.
Okay.
And like I said, I was on there.
Okay.
For instance, I know of at least one judge that was on that committee. There were several others outside of the legislature. And they did give an opportunity for a lot of nonprofits, mental health organizations to do presentations. Didn't seem like a lot of the outside recommendations were followed, however.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, these outside agencies, were their members on the board too?
Not necessarily. Okay. There were a lot of outside organizations that were not represented on that distribution committee that gave presentations, some of them very good and very extensive presentations about the need for addiction services and general mental health services. I can't stress enough, we have a real serious issue with mental health in Alabama, and it's especially acute in the veteran community. And unfortunately, Alabama is routinely ranked at or near the bottom in availability of mental health providers. That's not good. That's not something to be proud of. And George, you served in the military. You know the unique issues that we veterans sometimes suffer from, everything from PTSD to traumatic brain injury. Sometimes the civilian mental health industry is just not equipped to handle those unique issues. The federal VA is overwhelmed. They can't hire enough mental health professionals in Alabama. There is a federal law called the Mission Act that allows the federal VA to refer veterans out to what's called community care. But again, you run into that problem that there's just not enough mental health providers in Alabama, and there are even fewer tailored services for military veterans in the state of Alabama. There are some very good providers in the state. One of them is right there in the Mobile-Baldwin area. Right. Vets Recover.
Yes.
Does a great job.
Yes.
They have treated, I think, over 8,000 veterans over the last few years very successfully. And look, I don't mean to sound corny at all, they saved a lot of lives of our brothers and sisters who served in uniform. There's another one in North Alabama called the Client Care Continuum. Mm-hmm. There's one trying to get started in up in East Alabama called Spencer Recovery. And there are others, not only strict addiction, detox, mental health centers, but veteran well-being programs. The problem is they tend to be smaller, nonprofit organizations that don't get the funding that they need for those programs. And that's what we were trying to do with grant money, with opioid settlement dollars, and things like that. And boy, I tell you what, in Alabama, you run afoul of special interest groups, especially when there's money involved.
Right. Now, Ken,
it can get ugly.
Right. What is the population of our veterans in Alabama? I know it's very large.
Yeah, it's about 400,000 in the state. And we say about 400,000 because, believe it or not, even the federal VA cannot tell us the exact numbers for various reasons. But the best estimates in Alabama are about 400,000 veterans across the state. Now, that's important. When you add up veterans and military members, active duty military, National Guard, and their family members, and George, you and I know that family members, sometimes that's the toughest part about being in the military, or
correct,
family members. When you add all that up, you're talking about a quarter of the state of Alabama.
Wow.
And that's something to be very proud of.
Right.
But you're talking about 25% of the state of Alabama approximately has a direct connection to military service. Our economy is heavily tied to defense contractors and those active military bases, from Redstone Arsenal to Maxwell Air Force Base to Fort Novosel to the Coast Guard Aviation Training Center right there in Mobile.
Right.
My worry is that Alabama is getting a little bit of a reputation of not taking care of veterans, and there is a continuum of military veteran service. Now, why is that important? Well, obviously, it's important for things like veterans' mental health, but, you know, we're also talking about Space Command headquarters decision.
Right.
And a new Air Force tanker aircraft, possibly for the 117th. Unit in Birmingham,
right,
and more F-35s in the state. I keep warning, especially Republican politicians, you do not want to get even a minor perception that you're not taking care of veterans in this state.
Correct.
With all of that going on. And I feel like sometimes they're not listening.
Correct, correct. Ken, on your situation, tell us what happened again, because I think that's important for our audience to know.
Yeah, it's really bizarre, George. So after the members of the State Board of Veterans Affairs approached me and said, look, we have serious ethics concerns. Their characterization, not mine.
Right.
They said they had serious ethics concerns with everything that had happened over the previous few months dealing with veterans' mental health. I told them, look, state law says if you bring these to my attention, I am absolutely obligated to report that to the Ethics Commission. And if I fail to do so, believe it or not, I'm guilty of a misdemeanor crime for failure to report.
Right.
They understood that. I said, okay, I'm going to report it. Got confirmation they wanted me to report it. I sent the concerns into the Ethics Commission. They investigated it. They ultimately found a few weeks later, rather strangely, and I think in cursory fashion, to be honest with you,
right,
that the concerns did not amount to a violation of the state ethics code. Now, I got to tell you, I'm a former federal ethics attorney.
Right.
I find the state ethics code very nebulous and
right,
very hard to figure out.
Right.
So didn't surprise me that there was no violation, but with about a week after the Ethics Commission rendered their decision that there was no ethics violation, I literally was out of the office down in South Alabama visiting our soon-to-be-open new state veterans home in Enterprise, Alabama, mm-hmm, and I get a call from my office in Montgomery saying, hey, you just got an email, George, from mm-hmm, the governor's office asking me to resign as commissioner.
Damn.
Now, you know, no offense, but in the Navy, if I ever terminated someone, especially in a position like that, that had been on the job for 5.5 years, I would never dream of sending an email to someone saying, I demand your resignation. I would call them in, explain the concern, talk about it, let them give their side of the story. No, got an email.
Wow.
And so I notified the State Board of Veterans Affairs. I ended up going over to the governor's office. Really didn't talk to the governor. The governor's never talked to me about any of this. It's been her staff. And I went over and I said, okay, look, you want me gone? I'm sorry it came to this. We agreed that I was going to leave today. Today was supposed to be my last day as Commissioner of Veterans Affairs.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, well, that's fine. We all agreed there'll be a cordial parting of ways. I'll go off and find another job where I can serve veterans and do some good in the world. I've still got a lot of energy left in me to serve veterans or some other public service.
Right.
But then within a few weeks, the State Board of Veterans Affairs convened and unanimously asked me to stay as commissioner. And that infuriated the governor's office. And then they demanded my immediate resignation. The board met again. They took another vote, and they voted against the governor and in my favor and asked me not to leave immediately to honor my December 31st departure. To be honest with you, after they took the unanimous vote in my favor, I was considering just saying, I'm staying. I was appointed for a 4-year term. I work for the State Board of Veterans Affairs. And they've asked me to stay unanimously, so I'm going to stay. They're my bosses. But the governor, right after they took their third vote in support of me, the governor's lawyer, her general counsel, walks up and presents a letter saying, we don't care about the board vote. The governor is exercising her supreme executive power, and we're booting you right now.
Wow.
It got a little worse from there, George. They sent police officers to my office to escort me out. They sent police officers to my house with my wife and son there, not knowing what the heck was going on. Police officer was camped out in front of my house waiting for me to show up at my house. They kind of treated me like a common criminal.
Wow.
It's the most bizarre thing. Everybody, I'm getting support and comments and editorials all over the country about this, pretty much universally expressing concern and outrage about this. And the universal sentiment is this is so clearly retaliation for the guy filing an ethics complaint that he was obligated by law to file.
Hmm.
So really an unfortunate situation all around. It did not have to come to this.
All right. Did you talk to Jim Marshall about this?
I have not. By the way, I saw today that he's announced he's not running for governor. I have met Attorney General Marshall. I think highly of him. Like I said, I give him credit. He was the one that negotiated these over $800 million worth of settlement decisions in the opioid crisis.
Right.
So
right.
I tip my hat to him on that. I was just hoping that by now we would have seen a significant set aside to help veterans in the state.
Right.
But that was not his decision.
Right.
He got the settlement. He did not make the decision on the distribution of the funds.
Yeah. I like Steve. He's a good buddy of mine, you know.
Yeah, we've been at a lot of events. In fact, we were at the 1819 News annual banquet, and he sat right next to my wife and had pleasant conversations.
Right.
I genuinely have respect for him, and I think he's done some very good things. A good man. I just would leave it at that.
Right. So is there a resolution for this, or you're just going to say that's it and I go
now,
on?
No, unfortunately, the resolution is the courts are going to have to decide this. So
okay.
I am going to court, and
okay.
I hate to do that. I really do.
Right.
I mean, even though I'm a licensed attorney, I practiced law for 16 years. I was a federal attorney. I worked for the biggest law firm in Atlanta.
Right.
My last resort is litigation. I don't like it.
Okay.
But at some point, you have to say, that's the only way to resolve this.
Right.
I have tried. I tried to negotiate with the governor's office. I tried to reason with him. When I went over for my first meeting with him and started going through some of these same facts, I was told to my face, we're really not here to go through the facts. The decision has been made.
Okay.
So I don't know how you reason with something like that.
All right. All right, Steve, we got a few seconds before our break. And, I just want to tell the audience that I wanted to give you this opportunity to let them know your story. And we'll have you back on again, later on down the road. And whenever you want to come back, just come on back,
Thanks so much, George. I appreciate it. And I'd love to talk about some of the great things we were doing for veterans over the last 5.5 years.
All right. Well, on our next show, maybe next week, a week after, we'll have you back, okay?
I'd love it, George. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you, folks. Ken Davis, the former commissioner for the Alabama Veterans Affairs. We'll be right back after these messages.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
All right, folks, welcome back. Welcome back. I enjoyed that conversation with Ken. It's unbelievable what happened. Like he said, he has a long record with the United States government, and unfortunately that had to happen. So what can we say, folks? I just wanted to let you, our audience, know what was going on, okay, one way or the other. So that's what happened. What else is happening in the news today? Well, President Carter passed away at the age of 100, folks, at the age of 100. And, Carter was a good man, very, very good man, but he was a lousy president. Lousy president, but a good, good person, honest person, hardworking. He worked up until he was unable to work. And that was about two years ago when he was 98 years old. But before that, he went all over the world. Habitat for Humanity, he started that, doing such a great job with that. And, he would do it. Compare Carter to Clinton or Obama. Okay? Compare. What have they done since they left the presidency to help American citizens out? What have they done? Zero. Zero, zero, zero. What have George Bush done? Zero. But what did Jimmy Carter do? And folks, Jimmy Carter is the reason I came over to the Republican Party, okay? Because of the fact that he was a Democrat and he didn't do anything, in my opinion, okay? He got a Nobel Peace Prize for what? What peace did he do? He gave away the Panama Canal. And now the Chinese own part of that. Okay? Think of all the bodies of Americans who worked on the Panama Canal and the money that we, the citizens, paid to get that built. It wasn't the Panamanians. It was the Americans, folks. We did that. We suffered. How many Americans died from malaria? Because it was a swamp-infested place building the Panama Canal. And then Carter gave it away. He gave it away. And then you have the Chinese coming. And, you know, they're part owner. From what I've heard, they're part owner of the Panama Canal. The Chinese. We cannot allow that to happen. And then Trump mentioned it, and the Democrats went wild. Oh, now. And he mentioned Greenland also. I mean, they went wild. Why should we take the Panama Canal? What do we have to do with the Panama? We suffered. You idiots. We suffered. We died. We spent a lot of American money building the Panama Canal. That's why. And we cannot and should not allow the Chinese to take over the Panama Canal. No way in the world should we allow that. Okay? No way in the world. To me, folks, the Democrats are dangerous for America. And the Democrats and some of the Democratic sympathizers who have these podcasts, especially Roland Martin and some of the others, it's like, what good have America done? What good have Trump done? And they can't tell you what good has Biden done. Harris done, Obama done to this country. Okay? They can't tell you what good they've done. But they're asking us, what good has the Republican? What good did Reagan do? A lot. A lot. After Carter? A lot. Trump? After Obama? He did a lot of good. A lot of good things. Even though he had to fight like hell against the Democrats to do that. And look at what Biden and Harris are doing now. First of all, I'll take that back. Not Biden. Biden don't know what the heck is going on, okay? He doesn't know what is going on now. And you could tell it when you see him. But the way he was pushed by his wife, especially his wife and some of the other staff members, and they lied. They lied. Oh, he's doing good. Even Harris, you know. Oh, he's doing great. He's doing great. If he was doing so great, then why would you do a coup against him? Why? Why would you conduct a coup, the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, and the rest of the Democrats? Okay? They conducted a coup against Biden. Against him. So the situation is this. We have to stay strong. We need a leader that has guts, and Trump has those. Okay? Trump is almost running the country now, if you look at it. All right? When the leaders are coming in to other foreign leaders are coming in, they want to meet Trump. Trump mentioned the Canadians, and now before you know it, Trudeau was down in Mar-a-Lago, okay? Initially, the government, president of Mexico, you know, she started, rah, 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 rah. Well, all of a sudden, now she's acquiescing. Oh, yeah, we can do this. We can do that. This was after Trump was talking about Mexico and what we needed to do. The Chinese, somebody need to stop the Chinese. Look, they just hacked our Department of Treasury. Yesterday, they hacked into that system. The Chinese hackers did. Okay? China, folks, is not a friend of America. Iran is not a friend of America. Turkey is not a friend of America. Okay? Quite a few of these countries are not friends to America. They're not our friends. They are really. Russia is not our friend. Russia is our enemy. Venezuela is our enemy. And what they did, they emptied their jails and sent their criminals to America. And look at what's happening. Look at the crimes the Venezuelans are committing. Okay? And the same thing Castro did in the 80s. Same thing. And what the Biden and the Harris and the Obamas have done to this country via the immigration is criminal, in my estimation, folks. It's criminal. It's criminal what they've done and what they've unleashed on this country. It is truly unbelievable. So, President Trump has the task of trying to rectify what's going on and get these illegals out of America. Shut the border. That's the north border and the southern border. Shut it. Stop all U.S. citizenship. Okay? Stop it. Because you look at these, all these college students, they come here on their student visa. And look at what happened when Israel, between Israel and the Islamic groups and all of these students destroying some of our universities, jumping on Israeli citizens. There are too many of them. If you took a poll of how many born Americans are in the college, they would be very low, and how many illegal students are in our colleges and our professors, our teaching staff. Folks, we need to look at that, and hopefully President Trump will look at that. We need to get rid of some of these foreign teachers in our universities. Okay? We need to do that. All right, folks, time to get out of here. I'll see you next year at the same time. Next year, folks, at the same time. Until then, Vicon Dales, everybody, and Feliz Ana Nova. That means Happy New Year to everybody. That's Portuguese, okay? Feliz Ana Nova.